So, sorry about the break taking so long. Many of you already saw the demo. We'll continue after the talk. The second part is much shorter, around 15-ish minutes. And then we'll continue the demos, but those of you who are on the rush to go home, they can do it. So, model-based rendering of spatial audio. So far we discussed the object-based rendering, which means you have the object, you have X, Y, Z, etc., etc. Advantage is very well understood, part of the gaming environment, easy to show to the audio designers for gaming and for entertainment. Bad part is that we do all of the computation, all of the heavy lifting in runtime. Well, we render the audio, which means we have a CPU consumption which is proportional of the number of objects and starts to go quite heavy. Once you start to get 60, 70 objects, we already consume this amount of CPU which the rest of the game started to be envious. Video typically consumes way more in a game, and we easily exceed the budget that's dedicated to audio. So now the question is, can we somehow have a 500 objects, but do some of the computational part in advance before that? We'll see how to do that, but let's make a step back to something which for most of you is well known, which is called Fourier analysis or Fourier transformation. So if you have a signal which is function of the time, like this one, rectangular signal, Auguste Fourier, a long, long time ago, in 17th century, proved that we can represent any periodic signal as a sum of sinusoidal signals, like this, of first, third, fifth, seventh, and ninth harmonics. When we sum them, we get this. So the bottom line here is that we can represent any signal in time domain, one-dimensional, as a sum of basis functions. Those basis functions are sinusoidal and cosinusoidal signal, which are 90 degrees, basically, in 90 degrees different phase. Can we do something like this with the spatial signal? And the answer is yes. And it is called plane wave density function or signature function. And then this function is a function of the time, direction, and elevation, but also can be a function of the frequency. So it's a very powerful representation. For every given frequency bin, for every frequency, given point, we can, basically in spatial domain, we have those interesting closed surfaces which show where the sound is more intense, when it is less intense, and this function can be represented as a sum of basis functions, and this is pretty much the square when you can go from time and frequency and space and model representation. So let me show you those basis functions to become a little bit more clear. So for each frequency bin, this kind of a cardioid or whatever directivity pattern can be represented of the sum of certain basis functions. And there is an order for 0, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, etc., etc. And you see that they're getting kind of a curly, very strange, very interesting. But instantly, when you have, for example, a cardioid directivity pattern, it can be represented as a weighted sum of the omnidirectional microphone and figure 8 microphone. So most of you actually have used this. You most probably have worked with those microphones which are actually two inside, have a figure 8 and an omni microphone, and by changing the proportion, you form from omni to cardioid to hypercardioid to figure 8 microphone. That's nothing else but playing with the first order spherical decomposition of the sound field. And even we can do a quite physical representation by placing of three figure 8 microphones and one omni microphone in a close point. And suddenly we have a four channels of audio. One of them is figure 8 towards X, the other is towards Y, the third is towards Z, and an Omni microphone, and we have so-called B audio format. What we can do is, by proper mixing of this B audio format, generate a given directivity pattern. It is called first order directivity pattern. It typically is limited to this range between omni, through cardioid, hypercardioid, and figure 8. But because we have figure 8s in all directions, by summing them properly, rotating the phases, we can have a hypercardioid directivity pattern pointing to any given direction, which is kind of illustration how we can use those first order spherical decomposition of the sound field to create whatever directivity pattern we want. Obviously, if you want to go further and deeper, we can have more microphones. And this is a close picture of the spherical microphone right there, which is a sphere which contains 64 microphones. And what is good is that the sound field actually is quite well modeled going around this sphere. And by recording those 64 channels, we can go to seventh order of the spherical decomposition of the sound field. So it kind of senses and contains enough information to tell us from where the sound wave came and what is pretty much the shape of that sound wave. Seventh order provides a resolution which is beyond human hearing. So those 64 audio channels from here, after certain processing, can be derived to those 64 channels, which is the seventh order decomposition of the sound field, which allows us to generate a sound field and reconstruct it beyond the resolution of our hearing, which means close to perfect. Of course, they may not be just 64 channels. Like here, we can go a little bit lower. This is a 16-element spherical microphone array, which goes to the third order. It provides a quite decent capturing and representation of the sound field. If you render it properly, it sounds a little bit fuzzier. The sound sources are not sharp in their positions, but it is actually quite good. In all cases, much better than the four-channel first-order spherical harmonics decomposition, which is the B format. And if you want to save a little bit more CPU, what we can do is to do a decomposition of the sound field in so-called cylindrical harmonics, which means it is the scattering object is not a sphere but infinite cylinder. This should be sufficient. And then what happens is that we work just in one plane. So pretty much this is the directivity pattern only in this plane. And with those 16 microphones here, actually we can go one order higher than the 16-element spherical harmonics, which means at least horizontally we'll get a better perception losing the elevation and basically what happens above or below the plane. So this means with those devices we can capture the audio not as a changes of the air pressure in a point, but as a propagation of the sound wave with its directionality. Once we do this and decompose it in spherical or cylindrical harmonics, actually we have something which is very, very easy to work with. So this is a linear process, which means we can sample two sound fields from two different points and then sum them. Let's say separately noise from separately speech, and we can sum those 64 channels of the seventh order, and we'll have the same effect as those noise and speech happen it together simultaneously. The second is that this representation allows us to rotate the sound field very easy with certain relatively straightforward math. Remember, at the end, when you reach the headphones, we have to compensate for this. Simply put, when I move my head left, I have to rotate the sound field so it stays and it does not move. And this is a nice property of the spherical decomposition of the sound field. And the other thing, once, because it is for each frequency bin, we work in frequency domain. Convolution, the convolution with head-related transfer functions is actually simple multiplication, which makes the whole processing much faster. Obviously, we can represent this directivity pattern of the human ears we call head-related transfer functions in spherical decomposition and literally to multiply with this filter each of the spherical harmonics decomposition. So if we want to do a model-based rendering engine, the block diagram actually is the same. Just we do it on a multiple channels and reflect the head rotation, apply the HRTFs, which is a multiplication, but on many channels, and we add the reverberation. And all of those are represented now in spherical decomposition domain. So overall, rendering one sound field in spherical decomposition is computationally more expensive than rendering one channel, which is object-based. However, imagine a game. You are sitting in a jungle, and there are some tigers which we have to chase, or etc. Those are the interactive audio objects in the game. But beyond that, we have a couple of hundred non-visible, non-interactive objects, like birds chirping, wind blowing, whatever happening somewhere far, there is a thunderstorm. Everything like this can be recompiled. So we still have the object model into the during the game design. We compile it, pre-compile it, basically doing the computation in advance, and generate that sound field, which is the background. And still we can do the foreground, the interactive characters, which are can be either object or also live in spherical domain. But suddenly we break that unpleasant dependency that consumption of CPU is proportional to the number of objects. We can take a couple of hundred objects, recompile them, and then we have one spherical field rendering. Yes?
Do they have to be in the same order or different order?
We can do easily with, let's say, you have 64 channels for something very sharp, and the first four channels are third order, which can be the wind blowing, etc., without any problems. You just go up to a certain number of channels. It's very straightforward, very easy. Okay, and the video which is here, I'm not going to show you because this is a demonstration of the being downtown Kirkland, but that's pretty much explanation what happened. So we had that microphone array and a camera like this on top of it, which is basically 230 degrees angle of view. So there are two cameras. You can stitch them and create a full sphere of the video and record the audio with the 64 microphones. The rest is rendering engine entirely in spherical harmonics, in model domain. You put the device on, you look around, we counter-rotate the sound field so it stays unmovable, and this is what is the second part of the HoloLens demo you hear. So you see, for 30 seconds, I told you the 4 minutes video, which I'm going to skip showing. Actually, the video is before we were able to talk about HoloLens. So the person stays in front of two large 18-inch screens, and we track the position with Kinect, and you move like this, and you are there, but only at the point where your head is. You move a little bit on the side, and it doesn't look that good. Yes?
So can this technique be used in playing video, 360-degree video, for example? This kind of everyone these days seems to be able to, like, playing 360 video over web. So as I pan around the camera, I can hear different things, depending on what I'm looking at.
So it depends. If you go to YouTube and play one of those videos, they have a player for this. We can play it here, but the audio is just stereo. When you rotate, the audio does not rotate. It doesn't pan.
Yeah, I understand, but something like this can be used to help that experience.
Yes. If the audio has at least four channels in B format or 16 channels up to the third, then pretty much yes. And this is what we are discussing, and this is will be one of the conclusions. So we're on the brink of this whole spatial audio sound field coming towards us. And there will be a lot of discussions about the standards, but you see, pretty much I discussed the model decomposition pros and cons. A low-saving CPU can render hundreds of audio objects which are pre-compiled. We can do the rendering with head-related transfer functions, but nothing can stop us to do the rendering with your 7, 14 speakers at home, how many you have, as far as we know where they are. We can mimic and model any microphone you want. Assume that you have a very nice and pricey microphone. Theoretically, if you go and scan it and measure the sensitivity, the directivity pattern of this nice microphone, we can make and combine the 64 channels in a way that the output, the single channel, will sound the same as this microphone, with all of the frequency responses, with all of the reverberations, etc., etc. So, returning back to the example of that two microphone thing with a spherical and figure eight, when you can move the sliders and choose the directivity pattern, with this spherical microphone array, we can basically literally point, I want in this point this microphone or that microphone. And if we do have the three-dimensional directivity pattern of the microphone, voila, you have it there. On the bad side, it's computationally expensive. It is more than object-based rendering. We can do rotation. We cannot do translation. So those of you who try to walk in downtown Kirkland like this, forget it. You're just rotating. Yes?
I'm always interested in like what you think are the most important things for getting the realism. So if you mentioned about having to calibrate the individual microphones. So say you have one of these cylindrical arrays with 16. You mentioned like first order, like a four-channel representation, you know, it's much better naturally to go to 16, right? That's like a big increase in the resolution. How relatively important is it to calibrate each of those microphones compared to that? Like, is a jump from from first order to, I don't know, what order, 16 mics, is that like a bigger jump, or would you rather spend your money on correcting each individual microphone?
So first, calibration is not that of a big problem. Each microphone, even today, we're not the ones who invented the spherical array. We basically applied it towards VR and AR scenarios. Even today, if you buy a spherical microphone array, it came calibrated in the factory. Second, today, if you get a MEMS microphone, like the ones which are there, the specification says plus minus 3 dB. Practically, within half a dB is the sensitivity. They came from the same waffle. They went through the same manufacturing process. You should be enormously unlucky to get 64 microphones from different waffles or two or three to have a 2 to 3 different sensitivity. So in most of the cases, the entire series actually is within a very, very narrow limit. So the calibration is not that hard, and even if you don't do calibration, it is not that big of a disaster. We do have today a quite well matching. Making a matching omnidirectional microphones is not that difficult. Making them directional and matching is way more difficult. It depends on too many manufacturing tolerances, but in this particular case, the sphere, the solid sphere, is an enormously well stabilizing factor for all of the manufacturing tolerances. We can make a sphere within 0.1 millimeter radius. This is not a problem. So, spatial audio and its representation. I would say that in conclusion, all of those channel-based thinking is kind of over. I'll put this chopper on that speaker, and then the voice of the female on the front left speaker, and the response or the gunfire on the right surround speaker, that's gone. This is something which is going to leave and will going to basically to go away. So, a very hot area is all of those model representation of the audio. Nothing much yet into production, into real audio engines. Yes?
Is it going away because everybody's going to be wearing headphones and virtual reality glasses?
No. There are already methods which allow, even if you do have 7.1 or 7.4.1,
speaker.
Yes, Dolby Atmos is an example of that. At the end, you have up to 32 channels of mono audio, which comes with XYZ, and you render it on those 11, 12 speakers. So this is where we're heading. Full filter or model representation, it's still in research. It is still, you guys see it, it works, it is there, but between here in research and getting this to a product, it's a long way, especially when it goes to media distribution, standards, how to represent this in one or another form. Otherwise, technically, it is possible. You heard it this evening, and it is not from yesterday in my team, which we play and do this rendering. So there are certain steps towards standardization. MPEG-H is already uses high-order ambisonics, which is exactly what we are talking about. There are things which start to pop up one after one after one. Even YouTube decided to make their own high-order ambisonic standard exactly for those 360 videos, so we can basically have more realistic audio and not just stereo, regardless of how you rotate your head. And the good thing is that this field representation is device independent. Object representation is also device independent. Example is you have these 64 channels. You decide about the rendering at the end. You have one speaker. Let's take the zero to represent the Omni and just feed that speaker so you can hear everything. You can basically separate the capture and representation from rendering. And also, example is today is Dolby Atmos. You get this object oriented, but you can render Dolby Atmos on stereo, on 5.1, on 7.1, on 7.4.1. Again, I want to underline heavily, this is not, we're in research building. We do play with something which is in the future, but almost nothing of what we discussed tonight is kind of in the bright future. It is here now. Today, what we can do is HoloLens development kit, the devices we saw. This is the first release. This targets gaming, game companies, researchers, geeks, programmers who want to write applications for this device. It was released in March this year. It is expensive. It costs $3,000, but you still can go and buy it if you are basically a diehard geek. To remind you, when we released at Xbox, the development edition was $10,000. Development edition of PlayStation is $15,000. This is the device you are going to create new content. The commercial version of HoloLens is going to be better, lighter, etc., and it's coming soon than you can anticipate. But what we do have today is that this entire spatial audio engine is not in HoloLens development kit. It is in the Windows 10 software development kit. You download Windows 10 development kit for free. You can play with the engine. Yes, it's the bare metal. It is there. You can rotate it. You can do stuff. There is a wrapper which is in DirectX, easier to work with, much less programming, a little bit limited functionality. The virtual surround sound support in Windows 10 is basically invoking this engine underneath. You put the headphones, you can watch a movie with 5.1 or 7.1 audio. Not movement of the head yet. Obviously, in very, very short time, we're going to see the full spatial audio support in Windows 10, supporting of headphones which contain that head orientation tracking. And this is not, again, something in research. This is something real. It is part of HoloLens. We deployed it on last November was the second stage with more than 500 blind people for navigation in Reddington in London, United Kingdom. Pretty much there is a light instrumented environment, some kind of a passive markers on each lamppost. Somehow the application, this is a different group in Microsoft Research, on the phone can sense those markers, and there is a headphone with IMU microphones, so the blind person literally can tell the phone, take me to the Charing Cross, and he or she starts to hear beep, beep, beep in three-dimensional audio, and the person can walk and navigate in this lightly instrumented environment. This last November, 500 blind people are already using this. Have in mind that I mentioned it at the beginning. We, those who can see, tend to snap the sound source to the potential sound source. I talk about the mono speaker and how we can hear the sound coming from the left and the right side of the screen. One of the biggest tests for this spatial audio engine was when we had to check, is this real or just our brain snap it? So we had four or five blind persons in our lab and asked them, here, when you hear a sound, go and touch it. That was it. And all of them were able to go and to find the sound source, loudspeaker or whatever it is, and to touch it. One of the sound sources was the standard office phone we have in our offices. And the sound was the same. And we have a real phone there. Or from those blind people, two are Microsoft employees, so they have the same phone in their offices. They were able to pick up the handset. One of them said something which I still believe is the highest compliment to this spatial audio. For us, blind people, this technology is like the large screen color TV for you guys. And with this, we end the talk. There will be more demos if you want to go and to see if you couldn't do this during the break. But that was it for the talk. Thank you.